Welcome to the Neurodiverse Love Podcast. I'm Mona, and I was married for 30 years, and we didn't find out until our 29th year of marriage that we were a neurodiverse couple. And I've been divorced since 2018, and together we have an amazing adult daughter who's thriving and doing fantastic. And today I'm really excited to be joined by my friend and colleague, Jody Carlton. And Jody has been on the podcast before, but Jody, it's been a really long time, I think, right?
It's been a while.
Yeah. So Jody, welcome. And I'd love if you could share with the listeners a little bit about all the amazing work that you do, and maybe even a little about how you got started doing this work.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I'm so excited to be back here as well. And thanks for the plug, by the way. So how I got started is probably the best place to begin. So I have an amazing daughter who's 20 years old at the moment. And she was diagnosed with developmental delays in her first year of life, and then eventually an autism spectrum diagnosis, what used to be Asperger's. And as a therapist at the time, I was working as a clinical therapist. I really knew nothing about autism and had not been trained about it. I always say it was a chapter in a book in a class. So I dove head, first into learning about autism so that I could support her, and then became kind of the go-to therapist in my region for others, because other therapists didn't know a thing either. And so I worked a lot in the beginning with parents of children who were diagnosed as autistic, and then also moved into working with teenagers and young adults. And honestly, I didn't work with a lot of couples in the beginning because my own marriage was an absolute mess. And I did not feel qualified to help people who were married. And so I was married for 19 years. And I also have a son too, by the way, who is, we've realized is ADHD. Kind of recently, actually, even though he's been tested a few times. So we've got two neurodiverse kiddos there.
Yeah.
But, I was married for 19 years and, left the marriage in 2016, and wasn't until after I left and was able to get some distance and clarity that I really started understanding more about adult autism and what that looks like. Really, I had worked with some young adults in their late adolescent type developmental years, but none of them were really in, in marriages yet. And when I started learning more about what this looks like in adults, that's when I had some aha moments of about my children's father. And I think I've told you before, I didn't really want to work with couples. I fought it. Like, I did not want to do it. But as I got clarity and more, people just kept emailing me, asking me for help. And I finally said, okay, fine. And then once I did, it was just like floodgates opening, and I saw such a need, as I know you've seen, just worldwide. People don't have support, don't have resources that are in their own marriages, in their own relationships. Adults, so many adults are, I just did a poll on my YouTube channel about asking people how old they were when they realized they were autistic, and the average, the answer with the biggest response is in their 40s and 50s.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that, Jody, because when I look at the analytics for my podcast, I'd say like 75% of the listeners are in their late 30s to late 50s.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are the folks in the lost generation. Those are the folks that would never have been assessed or diagnosed in school. And those are the folks that are struggling the most because, as you and I both know, they may be really successful in their careers, but have had, maybe a lot of challenges with relationships or been married multiple times and not understand why certain things are not working. And so that's kind of the mission we're both on, Jody, right? Because, we both I know we both have talked about this a lot, you know, all the unintentional hurt and pain and trauma in our own marriages and relationships, and then what we see for other people. And it's just really, really, really hard. It's really, really hard for me to see it, but also for everybody who has experienced it to know that there is a reason for all the misunderstanding, the confusion, and the hurt and the pain, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's been interesting as, you know, in the work that I do, I coach people worldwide. I've got more clients in Australia right now than North America, which is where I am. And it's just fascinating to me, that the themes are just the same, no matter where you are, the themes are the same, because really ultimately it's about relationship and connection. And I see so much, it's not just about the autistic partner, the neurodivergent partner being the problem, but also just that the misunderstanding being so rooted in being different and approaching mm-hmm. life differently and having these difference in expectations and values and just there's so much misunderstanding, but it's just so prevalent. And like you said, this is the lost generation, which is it's starting to become more apparent to these folks when their children are diagnosed. Some of those children are now, like me, college age and flying the nest. And these couples are like, wow, you know, what now? And right. and their relationship is just so disconnected. It is very painful.
Yeah, I so agree. I am so excited that we're going to have this conversation, because you and I think are very mission and purpose based. And if I could wave a magic wand tomorrow and bring understanding and compassion and acceptance to all the neurodiverse couples out there, so they could either choose to love each other, you know, the way they are, and to live their best lives and to be their most authentic selves, that magic wand would be waving nonstop every day. or if they decided, okay, now I understand we have differently wired brains and maybe we're not the right partners for each other, but we can be friendly or friends and have each other in our lives. You know, that's that discernment piece. So I think that is so, so important, because you and I both ended, or our marriages ended. We understand so much more now, and we both had other relationships since our divorces. And I want to tell the listeners, I'm going to start with this, and also I'll bring it up at the end, that Jody and I are starting a monthly support group. And that support group is going to be open to both the neurotypical or non-autistic partners and the autistic partners, but not for you to come as a couple, for individuals to come. And the support group will start November 1st. We'll meet every first Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the cost is only $25. So we hope that those of you who are listening, who find our conversation helpful and think you would want to meet others who are, you know, different neurotypes, to understand more about your relationship, your partner, yourself, we're going to invite you to come and join us, and we'll tell you how you can sign up when we get to the end of the podcast. So, Jody, I think one of the things we talked about wanting to start out with was, we are not in this conversation promoting divorce, promoting ending your relationship. In fact, you know, I say it on the podcast all the time. I think every man I've dated since my divorce is autistic, autistic ADHD, or is neurodivergent in a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. And I embrace all of their differences and my own differences. So I think that's what I want to start out with, you know, being able to embrace our own uniqueness and the uniqueness of our partners is really critically important. What about you? What do you think?
No, yes, I 100% agree with you there. And as far as the support group goes, I'll add that we're really looking for people who are in that place of trying to figure out where to go from here. And again, like you said, Mona, we're not advocating divorce or ending relationships, but Okay, so I tell everybody that I'm pro-person, that it's not about any one person fulfilling the other, but two healthy whole human beings being together in a relationship. And sometimes I think it's important to reflect on our relationship continuously in order to continuously choose it. And so for people who are in a place of assessing, looking at that relationship, looking at who am I, what's important to me, and who are you, what's important to you, and is that a match? Do we actually align? Because like you said, sometimes it becomes apparent that we're not aligned. And I've seen so many people, and I've lived this myself, who continue, even though there's a pretty major mismatch, for a lot of different reasons, we choose to keep trying. We choose to keep hoping that somehow, you mentioned magic wand, somehow magically we're going to be different people, or that our partner's going to be a different person, that we're going to have different needs. And so the group really is to help people who are in that place of trying to figure out where they're going next in the relationship.
Yeah, that was beautifully said. And I think, you know, this is a perfect kind of transition into what decisions we had to make individually that brought us to the point where we knew we wanted to end our relationships. Because I've talked about this on a podcast before, and you may have talked about it on your podcast too, but I think we all have different breaking points. And I think that discernment of, you know, is this something that can change, that I personally can change, because we can't change our partners? Mm-hmm. Is this something that is based on neurology, mine or my partner's, and probably will not change? Is this something that we can work on together? Are we both willing to do the work, right? Mm-hmm. So I think all those things have to be addressed. And then we have to decide, you know, and I used to say this all the time, if nothing changes in my marriage in the next 3 to 5 years, I actually gave myself a lot of time, right? I didn't say in the next 6 months. If nothing changes in the next 3 to 5 years, how will I feel? Will I be happy? Will I be healthy? Will I be content? And repeatedly, the answer for me was no. If nothing changes, I will not be a happy person. I probably won't be healthy physically or emotionally. Mm-hmm. So do you want to share a little bit about, you know, your breaking point or some of the things that happened, and I'll share mine?
Sure. I'm happy to start. So, you know, my marriage started off, my ex-husband and I were really, really close friends. And I mean, we were just best friends, and that's not how the relationship started. We did begin dating, you know, and then became very good friends. So there were so many things about our marriage and about our relationship that were in alignment, you know, interests and values. And so there were so many good things that were there. And I think over time, those really good things are very much what kept me in the relationship, for sure. But we started having problems very, very early on, looking back now. Mm-hmm. Due to a lot of misunderstanding because of neurodiversity, but also, and this is something I see very regularly, we both brought a lot of other dysfunction to our marriage from childhood and family of origin and other relationships. And we just, honestly, it was a hot mess, as we say here in Georgia. And we didn't know how to fix all that. We went to therapy, we went to counseling. And I've said so many times, it made things worse, because the therapists really were not recognizing the neurodiversity, which is not about recognizing what was wrong with him, but they didn't recognize what was different about us. And so over time, honestly, I have to say it got more and more volatile over, mm-hmm. over the course of the 19 years, because we enjoyed our lives together, but the bad became bad. It became intense. It became scary. It became frightening. And then we had children, and when you add children to an already taxed and stressed dynamic, it just, it's difficult. And then add to that, we had an autistic child, And, you know, just the demands on our systems, both of us, were just massive. And so for me, the final deal breaker toward the end, I mean, I thought about leaving many times around even the 10-year mark. I talked to an attorney and I thought about leaving. But some of the things that kept me there were that we had these children. I had to stop working for 4 or 5 years to be just a primary support for my kids. And he was our breadwinner. But toward the end, it had just become so volatile. And I want to say this is like a snowball that had just gotten, if you start a snowball at the top of a mountain, mm-hmm. and start rolling it, it had become an avalanche between us. And there were so many layers of pain and hurt, and it had turned into contempt. And it was just so that we both were at the point of just, it was dangerous. Our relationship was dangerous. It was teetering on the verge of violence. When I saw that, and then I saw my kids being affected by that, I saw their fear. I saw that the conflict between him and me was affected. They were fearful. Mm-hmm. And that for me, I think the mama bear in me, honestly,
sure.
Is what was my final straw, because I had endured so much and was willing to endure so much, a lot, largely because of my own past and my own conditioning to just suffer. But it was when I saw the fear in their eyes, that was sobering. And that was my wake up call. And that's when I left. And so, I know we're going to talk a little bit more about deal breakers. And so I think I'll pause there, because I want to get more into, more into this. How do you know? For me, that's what it was.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And what's interesting, Jody, is I hear more from people who are in that situation where it's either gotten violent or it is on the verge of violence, and one partner, separates or gets out of the house or whatever. And the violence may not be towards the partner. It may be actually mm-hmm. And, I violence is not okay. Emotional abuse, physical abuse, any kind of abuse is not okay. There's no excuse for that. And I hope that those that are in that situation can get help by, contacting one of the hotlines in your community. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, and I've apologized to my ex numerous times about this. For me, I was the screamer. Never hit my ex-husband, never, believe me, I wanted to at times. I know he wanted to hit me too. We never, ever laid a hand on each other. But I grew up in a household where my father was autistic and we didn't know it. And actually, the way in which he communicated often to my sister and I when he was on the verge of a meltdown was intense, very loud screaming. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up in my family of origin thinking that was an okay way to communicate with people you love. Mm-hmm. And, I didn't go to therapy when I was younger, even though both of my parents were psychologists, right? So that's the irony there. and so in my marriage, when I was upset, when I got triggered by something that my ex said or did, I would scream. And oftentimes what would accompany the screaming is crying. And I know that I emotionally overloaded, flooded my ex every time I did that, but I didn't know. So we were creating this toxic situation. Mona screams, Mona cries, Mona keeps the conversation going and going and going, or the argument going and going and going, sometimes for hours. Mm-hmm. And then my ex-husband would shut down. He very rarely would scream at me until our separation. Then he screamed. He found his voice.
He found it.
But yeah. So for me, the breaking point was there was so much negativity in our relationship, because for over 7 years, my ex did not work. And we had agreed he would take a year off to work on a project he wanted to work on, but he didn't go back to work for another 6+ years. And my ultimatum was, you need to get a job and you need to have that job or work for the rest of our lives, or I will be divorcing you. So that was wrong of me to say it that way. I know that now, because what that created was his job became his number one priority. He would do whatever he needed to keep that job. And in a way, it became his mistress. You know, he would work all kinds of crazy hours. And our daughter went to college and I was alone. And the loneliness became overwhelming. And I hear this often from a lot of partners, and it's usually the woman. The loneliness is just, you know, depressing, and it can affect your emotional and mental and even physical health. And then I separated, or I asked for separation. My ex wanted a divorce. He wanted to cut it. And I said, no, let's do 6-month separation, which turned into almost 2.5 years of a separation, which is crazy. But we could talk about that later. But the thing is, I knew that I couldn't handle the negativity, the loneliness, the depression anymore. And I couldn't figure out a way to get myself out of it. And no matter how much information I shared, no matter how much I wanted things to change, I even suggested we move to another place that we both might enjoy more than where we lived. I was met with negativity. I was met with pushback. And it just was exhausting. And I know it was exhausting for my ex too, because I have lots of ADHD traits. I've never been officially diagnosed, but I see it in myself. You know, every time I look back at our relationship, I see it glaringly. And I know that that really stressed him out. Really stressed him out, because I wanted to do things, you know, on the spur of the moment. I wanted to move. I wanted to explore, you know, the world. I changed jobs every 2 to 3 years. Craziness. And he wanted stability and more routine and all of that. So, yeah.
You know, it's funny you should say, I'm gonna just gonna
go ahead.
Say that about the ADHD, because, you know, I think that's something that I'm gaining more and more understanding about ADHD too over time. And I always thought I understood it, just, you know, I thought I understood autism. And the more I've learned, even just in the last 5 years about ADHD, I also started to see some of those traits in me too. And I've always said I'm neurotypical. And I think, you know, in terms of autism, I'm definitely not autistic, but I also really say, my brain can really be going, you know, nonstop, and I can be very hyperverbal. You mentioned the conversations that last hours. Oh my gosh. I know I completely exhausted my ex-husband with those conversations. And even, you know, you mentioned other relationships. The man I dated after my divorce for a couple of years, he would, honestly, in that relationship was when I learned the importance of a timer, and I teach it to my clients, because he's like, you know, 10 minutes and I'm out, you know, I can't even process what you're saying after that. And I'm such a verbal hyper processor I outsourced a lot of that processing that needed to be going on inside of me in those conversations. So I completely relate to what you just said.
Yeah. And I totally understand. The next relationship that I had with a man I dated almost a year, who kept asking me if he was autistic. Now I know he was. He said to me, at the time I was on Cymbalta, because I was on it for about 4.5 years. And I remember him saying to me, if you had any more emotions, I could not handle it. And I didn't take offense to it, because I knew he was being honest, and, you know, we still were trying to figure out if he was autistic. And I think that that could be a breaking point for the autistic partner, right? Like, if we're super verbal and it's also related to emotions, and we're constantly flooding our partners and we're dysregulating them, oh my gosh, we don't create an emotionally safe relationship or environment.
Yes. So. And that's a really common coupling. A common dynamic is for a partner who's come from a pretty traumatic background of some kind that really struggles with emotional dysregulation, or just intense emotions, maybe not even dysregulation, but sometimes dysregulation, but really intense emotions and really intense responses or reactions to situations. And you're right, it's what attracts those individuals to autistic partners a lot of times in the beginning is that lack of emotional volatility, that there's a, and not to say everyone who's autistic has no emotional range, but some in this particular combination that I'm referencing, that is a very common theme where someone who has intense emotions is really attracted to someone who stays kind of mid-range with those emotions. But over time, the emotional partner really overwhelms the autistic partner. And then the emotional partner also feels kind of starved for the range of emotion from the other one.
Yes. And I hear that often. And so here's, you know, an opportunity for us to share that all of this, once you understand that, you know, one or both of you is getting dysregulated when you're triggered by something the other does, or sensory overload, or you've had too many meetings at work, or the kids are screaming and the dog is barking. I think once we understand what our triggers are individually and as a couple, we can begin to figure out what changes we can make for ourselves and with our partners. But without knowing or understanding our family of origin, history of trauma, or our neurological differences, it just turns into, like you said, you know, toxicity, conflict that never gets resolved and all of that, right?
Absolutely. And I think that so many, we talk about theory of mind or cognitive empathy in reference to our autistic neurodivergent folks, but the whole double empathy problem is that it basically means that each partner is so ground or so in their own perspective and coming from their own perspective that they struggle to see that the other one's perspective is also legitimate, or the other one's style or you know, way of thinking is legitimate. It just feels so much like mine is the way. And each partner is just so entrenched, I guess that's the word I'm looking for. And so that in and of itself is going to be a deal breaker for a marriage. It's going to bring it to a, you know, its knees. And one of the things we have to look at, and that's part of what the support group is for, is, are we really at an impasse, or is my partner really not a good fit for me and me for him? Or are we both not willing, can we be willing to say, okay, this is me, you are you, and can we have this relationship together, recognizing that we're both legitimate and valid, but sometimes the things you do really set me off, and sometimes the things I do set you off, but that doesn't mean one of us is bad or wrong.
Right. And we can learn different strategies and use different tools than we've ever used before if mm-hmm. we're both willing to work together as a team. Because I know that in my marriage, I saw us as being against each other. When my ex-husband didn't do things the way I thought they should be done in a marriage, and I don't know where I even got those ideas from, you know, some from my parents, some from my grandparents, and some from, you know, rom-coms. Because we were 21 when we met, and we were 23 when we married. So there wasn't a lot of, you know, life experience before that. But, you know, every time he did not do things the way I thought they should be done, there was judgment, there was blame. And the fact of the matter was we both had different ways of functioning in life and in our relationship. And without respect for those differences, it led to a lot of toxicity. And we even said it at the end. I think my ex said something like, I feel like our relationship is like a cancer. And I would agree with him. I mean, and it was just growing. It was metastasizing to every part of our conversations. And that's not healthy. But, you know, one of the things that I think is really important, and you and I've talked about this, is that we learned. We learned from our marriages that ended, and we were different partners in the next relationships we had. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. And even learned more. And I think the willingness to learn is the key. And that actually takes me back to deal breakers. And I know in my marriage, and even since my marriage ended as a co-parent with my ex-husband, you know, my kids were 10 and 13 when we divorced. So we still had a lot of co-parenting, a lot of raising children to do together. And my son's a senior about to graduate and go to college. And so we still have a little bit left to go there. But as we're co-parenting less and less, we have less and less of a relationship with each other. But even through all of that, one of the things that has been a pretty major problem in the relationship is that my motivation and willingness to learn has been there the whole time, whereas my ex has been very stuck. And I don't say that to bash him. It's just truly an observation. He's and even in the marriage, and this was part of what created a deal breaker, was I wanted to understand. I wanted to figure it out. I wanted to grow. And even since then I have, but he's very stuck in his narrative of me and our relationship and still in that place of contempt. And we managed to be cordial now, largely because I know how to not, I mean, I'm not as emotionally invested in that relationship anymore. But I think that's a huge thing in that both partners, and this is something I teach and I share, both partners have to be, the first they have to have the capacity even to recognize that, you know, my way is not the only way and you're a different human being, but they also, both partners also have to be willing and motivated to learn about themselves, not just about their partner. I have a lot of neurotypical partners come to me and they've done all sorts of research about autism. And they're really able to like go down the list of all the things that their partner. And when I ask them, okay, but you know, what are you bringing to it? I just get this deer in the head, like what?
You mean I have to change too?
I have to not even just change. I have to actually look at me and I have to realize, you know, what I'm doing that's contributing to this, because so many people, and that's where my ex-husband got stuck, is, you know, he had plenty to be angry with me about. I did bring a lot of dysfunction to it. And so, you know, I am like you, I am not in denial. I don't deny what I brought to it. And so the things that he, you know, was upset with me about, he, you know, rightfully so, but unfortunately that led to some narratives about me that were actually untrue because of the contempt that he had for me. And so he's not able to update those narratives. And if either partner can't look at themselves, which he struggles with as well, if they can't look at themselves and then look, be willing to step out, you know, step outside of the hurt and look at the partner, then that is a deal breaker. And it certainly was for me.
Jody, I don't think anybody said that on my podcast quite as clearly as you just said that. And so I kind of want to repeat it and maybe add a little bit to it, because I do think it's a deal breaker. I think this is where partners, especially if they've been together for a long time, are having tremendous difficulty kind of working through and updating the narrative they have of their partner, because, and you use the word, you know, untrue, that it's not true. And I think that is also what has happened with my ex. He repeatedly was looking in the rearview mirror, and this was during our separation, intensely, he was looking in the rearview mirror. He was recollecting all the nasty, mean things I'd said, you know, all the, you know, emotional flooding I had done, and he couldn't get past it. And, you know, it hurt so, so bad. And I have healed, thank God. But I know I see it in so many couples, because I do a couple support group, and they're looking at each other with literal exhaustion. I just don't have any more energy to try because the way you see me or the way I see you is no longer from a place of love and compassion. I can't let go of all the unintentional hurt. I can't let go of the narrative that's been written for 20, sometimes 30 years. And if you can't, I don't know how you can continue in the relationship and be healthy. And I know people stay together. You know, they may not have any physical or sexual intimacy. They may just be roommates for financial reasons, you know, and if that's your choice and it works for both of you, great. But if you're suffering, and this is where I see so many couples, they're suffering because they don't know how to end the relationship. Mm-hmm. But they also are aware of the fact that nothing is going to change. They don't have the energy. Their partner doesn't have the energy. And they're really struggling and suffering.
Yeah. And so they're essentially in the boxing ring, you know, going back to what you said about being opponents. You know, if there's one thing, you know, I have a couple right now that I'm working with that they're in that boxing ring. And so they're both kind of in defensive mode all the time, but they're not quite in antagonistic. Like they're both trying to defend themselves from the other, but not going on the attack. Whereas other couples I've worked with, and I know from my marriage, we ended up in that boxing ring, and not only were we defending ourselves, but we were throwing punches. Mm. And once you get in that space, if you aren't able at some point, if both of you aren't able to step out of the boxing ring and go, okay, I want to look at this from a different angle, from a different perspective. We're going to take these boxing gloves off for a minute. And I want to understand you. I want to understand me. Both partners have to be able to do that, because otherwise what happens is if we're not willing to consider updating the narrative, then confirmation bias kicks in, which is just basically we see what we're expecting to see. We yep. hear, we experience what we're expecting to experience. And that is how when I said some of the things that my ex believes about me are not true, and it's because he's got this narrative that he just cannot update. And so the things that I do and say, just, you know, he's seeing them through this lens of negativity and lens of his, who he believes I am as a person. And so that just reinforces his narrative of me over time, despite any other evidence to the contrary.
Right.
And so that, if you're in that boxing ring and you can't step out, and this is true of neurotypical and neurodivergent partners, neither one, you know, gets to say, well, you know, we don't do that, but they do that. No. I have another couple. I just did a video about this last week where he's the autistic and she's the neurotypical, and she's so hurt. She's hurt from 20 something years of marriage. And even though he is actively recognizing his autism in the last 5 years or so, and he's showing up on calls with me, he's asking me for guidance, he's asking me for tools, he's implementing, he's following through with everything that I recommend. Every time I get on the call with her, she's like, but he did this, 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 and this, and this, this, and she just goes back down the list of all the things that he's done wrong and done that were hurtful. And she's just not willing or able to step out of that boxing ring and even see the effort that he's putting in now. That in and of itself is just an impasse. The relationship is never going to improve. And if either one of you, even if it's yourself, and I think that's part of what I want to help people with you and the support group, is to even recognize, am I in the boxing ring? Can I step out of it? Because right. sometimes the hurt is so bad. It's so painful. And I've had people say to me, I cannot be vulnerable like that. I cannot let down my guard, you know? Okay. And I don't judge that.
Right.
You know, if that's where you are though, is staying in this relationship beneficial to you or your partner?
Amen, Jody. And I think what you said is exactly part of the deal breaker for me. I literally lost trust and respect in my ex-husband. And this was during our separation. the separation occurred because of all the negativity, and I was so lonely and depressed. But during the separation, one of the things that kept happening was he would say really nice things. He would say, you know, I want to make our marriage work, you know, and then he would treat me like basically a piece of shit. I mean, I'll be honest. I always used to say, you know, you're kind and loving to me, and then you kick me to the curb. And he kept doing that repeatedly. Now I understand why, because he had created peace, living on his own for the first time, and he couldn't figure out how he could move back into our house. And, you know, there were a lot of things going on in his mind that, you know, might have been helpful for him to talk to a counselor or a coach. And the same for me. You know, I think I did engage in some therapy. I'm not sure if he did or not. But the fact of the matter is, if you can't change your narrative and you've lost trust and respect for your partner and you don't know how you can gain that back, I really don't know how you can continue to be in that relationship and be healthy and not suffering. And none of this is easy, Jody. I mean, if the healing part, the repairing part, the letting go of the contempt, you know, it, I don't know that people can do it on their own. And that's why I think this support group may be very helpful for a lot of folks, because therapy can be so out of the financial range of a lot of people. And sometimes just talking to others who understand. And because this is going to be a mixed neurotype group, it's going to give folks an opportunity to hear from somebody who isn't their partner that is a different neurotype and get a perspective, right?
And I, you know, I think that's important, because what happens in groups where it's just one neurotype is there's like, I don't know, those scales get really tipped toward our side versus it becomes us versus them. And in my private Facebook group, we have both neurotypes, and it's been such a wonderful thing. I've had that group now probably three years or so, and there's about 2,300 people in there. And but you know, we have, not everybody's active all the time, but we have these wonderful conversations between neurotypical, non-autistic, and autistic, and even ADHD folks. And everybody, anyway, I require everybody to be respectful. We can't get into venting mode or bashing mode. And so many times, both, it can be a neurotypical, it can be a neurodivergent, says, thank you so much for sharing that perspective. It's easier to hear from somebody that's not your person that you're in that boxing ring with. And I think there's so much potential for growth when everybody's growth minded.
Yeah.
There's so much potential when you've got both. And that's why I definitely wanted us to have both neurotypes in this support group.
Yeah. You were the one that suggested it. And I've never done a mixed neurotype support group for individuals. I love the neurodiverse couples support groups that I facilitate for just that reason. Because when you're in a neurodiverse relationship, there usually aren't a lot of other people that understand the dynamics of your relationship. And then to get on Zoom with other couples you have never met in your entire life, and literally they could be explaining their problems, and you're like, oh my gosh, you are exactly talking about what I'm experiencing with my partner, whether you're the autistic or the holistic partner, and you're like, oh my gosh, somebody gets it. And so I think that's going to be so beneficial in this, you know, mixed neurotype support group. So I wanted to talk about one, well, a few other things, but one other thing that I think some people might be thinking, and that is, you know, if we had known, Jody, you know, earlier on in our marriages that we were in neurodiverse relationships, number one, would we have stayed? And number two, would we have done anything differently? So I'll start this one because I don't know if I would have stayed. I've said that maybe a few times on the podcast. And the reason I say that is 4 years into our marriage, I wanted a divorce. And I didn't know we were a neurodiverse couple, but I knew we were very different. And I loved my ex-husband. I do believe he is my soulmate, because I think soulmates are people that come into your lives to help you learn lessons. And oh my God, have I learned a lot. you know, it's been the learning trajectory. I feel like I have three dissertations in neurodiverse relationships or in relationships, which is wonderful because I'm a perpetual learner. But 4 years in, I wanted a divorce, and he begged me basically not to. And I decided not to. And then we ended up staying together another 26 years. So there are a whole lot of reasons that I decided to stay. And mostly it was because I still loved him. And I thought we could work on a lot of things, which we did work on some, but not, I think, enough. But the other thing is, what would I have done differently? Just about everything, Jody. So I'll start with a few things, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts. And I think the listeners are going to find this really helpful, because those of you that are still in your relationships, and you know, even if it's been 20 or 30 years of marriage, and you know that you're a neurodiverse couple, these are things you have control over that you can do differently. So first of all, I would have communicated very differently with my ex-husband. I would have talked about one issue at a time, rather than how I usually worked it. As soon as I knew I had his attention, I would flood him with, you know, 5, 10, 15 different topics and go on and on and on. And, you know, we talked about, we're both very hyperverbal. Yeah, I know that. So my communication style would have changed immensely. I would have had more boundaries. And boundaries are not about keeping, you know, your partner out. They're about protecting the things that are important to you. So one boundary would be that, you know, when you are not working and contributing to the household, you need to go find a job. You know, that's very critical for us as partners. And there are others. So boundaries, I didn't know how to create them. I didn't know how to uphold them. I was horrible at that. I also think the emotional reciprocity that I wanted in my relationship and expected in my relationship, I would have spread that out among more like hobbies, activities, and people. I've always had a large circle of friends, and I've always been really close to my family, but I do think I depended on my ex-husband for so much emotional reciprocity that I know he tried, and God bless his soul, really, God bless his soul. He could not do what I needed him to do, and I could have known, if I could have known that earlier, I think that would have helped too. And then the other thing, I think sensory issues. He always had issues with certain sounds. And I've said this on the podcast before. He literally told me that the tone and sound of my voice caused him pain. So I can laugh about it now. But at the time, oh my gosh, Jody, was I hurt, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know we were a neurodiverse couple. I didn't understand his sensory sensitivities. And I don't think he understand what my sensory, well, some of them he did, my sensory needs. I have seasonal affective disorder, and he went out and got me really cool light bulbs for the house, which was very, very sensitive and kind of him. But I know I didn't understand his, and I actually put him down sometimes for them, or I made him feel guilty or shame, just horrible. You know, I've apologized for a zillion things that I've done. But yeah, those are just some of the things I would have changed. There's probably 100 other things. What about you, Jody?
Oh my gosh, no kidding. So, to the question of whether I would have stayed, the answer, that's a complex question, mainly because the neurodivergence itself wasn't the only issue. And after 19 years of just a snowball avalanche of dysfunctional stuff, it was, you know, sometimes I think we had to throw in the towel. It was, as you were talking, I was thinking about it, you know, someone who's an entrepreneur starting a business, and they're going, and they're just getting deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper in the hole and in the debt. And even though it was a good business idea, it was a really great idea, comes a point where you have to just recognize, and cut, you know, you have to just recognize it's time. And so What would I have done differently? The thing is, I think that my ex-husband and I truly have the potential to have a relationship, a very loving relationship, a high quality relationship, had we known so much more in the beginning. And these are the things that I am fervently teaching both of my children, so that they can, as much as possible, go into their adulthood life and their relationships with eyes wide open. Because one of the things I'll just start with that I would do differently is I went into that relationship as a very wounded person. Mm-hmm. And he did too. We both came from family related, you know, situations where there was some abuse and a lot of dismissal of who we were as just people and human beings and our desires and wishes. And so we both came in as two wounded ducks, you know, looking for the other one to heal us. And that in and of itself is problematic. That's a codependent relationship right there. And so, you know, a part of my getting married was fear-based. You know, I was fearful that no one was going to want me. No one was going to love me. And he did. And we did. And we did love each other so much. And we enjoyed each other so much. We enjoyed so much about each other. We had so much fun together. But in the middle of all that, there were the wounds and the triggers and the moments where I was looking to him to make me feel okay. And he was looking to me to make him feel okay. And all of that dysfunction just destroyed. It was not, I honestly don't think the neurodivergence is what was our deal breaker. And I don't think neurodivergence is the deal breaker for the majority of relationships. And one of the reasons I know that is because I have so many other neurodiverse relationships. And they're not the romantic ones, but honestly, that a romantic relationship is just a different type of relationship. But I have my daughter, I have even my mom has realized that she's neurodivergent. We've started to really understand that. And my best friend is neurodivergent. And we have very close and healthy relationships, despite being different neurotypes and going at life really differently sometimes. It's, we have that ability to work through it, and we're all committed to working through it and to being authentic and honest and to self, you know, to look into ourselves. And so it's not the neurodivergence oftentimes. Now that's it. Some people, there is a capacity thing there. You know, some people don't have that capacity for whatever reason to look at themselves or willingness or whatever. So again, though, with my ex, I would have done my own work before I ever committed to marriage. I would have done my own work so that I knew I was coming into it as a whole person. And then I wouldn't have married him if he couldn't do that as well.
Amen. Oh my gosh. I love that, Jody. I feel the same way. Okay. I feel the same way.
Yeah. So the thing is, I know that he loved me. I know he cared about me. There, you know, there's no doubt about all of that, but then that goes back to what you said about boundaries. I didn't value myself enough to say, no, this is not going to work for me. I'm not okay with being treated this way, or, you know, this is my ask. And if, you know, whatever that is. Now, sure. Oh, I was very flexible. I was very accommodating. As a matter of fact, because of my very, you know, narcissistic father and past, I had been taught that being low maintenance was revered. You know, I was very proud of how low maintenance I was, which mm-hmm. was basically a narcissist way of making sure I didn't have any boundaries. And right. So, you know, I would learn how to have my own boundaries and have my own, you know, to know what I wanted and know what I wished for and to know, you know, this is a deal breaker for me, but you know, that not so much. This is a wish. I wish I could have it, but if I can't, I can live without it.
Yeah. I think those are repeated issues that come up in the couple's relationship support groups that I do, the neurodiverse couple support groups, and in the neurotypical non-autistic support groups, that folks have difficulty understanding what they actually want and need in a romantic relationship. And oftentimes it's because there's trauma.
Yes.
There's childhood wounds from their family of origin. And, you know, learning how to reparent and to understand what it is that makes you thrive, what it is that makes you balance, what brings you peace and joy. It's so difficult for so many folks, both, you know, of all neurotypes. And I understand that it was for me too. It isn't anymore. I'm very clear. Mm-hmm. But I think that is very, very intimidating to a lot of people, because I am not going to be treated poorly. I am not going to be screamed at, and I'm not going to scream, you know, at somebody that I care about without apologizing, which is something I didn't do in my marriage. So there are so many things that you talked about and I talked about that are so important now when we look back through the lens of more understanding and acceptance of what we did that could have been different and what our partners or ex-partners did that could have been different. So that's really helpful. And the codependency issue, Jody, is a real big one. I hear this over and over again. At the end of my marriage, my ex looked to me, he says, you know, we were in a codependent relationship. And I said, no kidding.
Right?
Yeah. And we still are during this separation. But hopefully, you know, he's learned, you know, what a healthy relationship is. I know I have. And when we know better, I know we can do better, right? So,
yeah, and I think that speaks to another question that I get a lot, Mona, is that, you know, you've had this marriage that ended after 19 years. And then I've talked about another relationship I was in for 2 years with a man who was autistic. And then that ended, and I'm not in a relationship now. You and I both have talked about the dating scene, and I have been on that. You know, I have dated, so a good bit since my divorce. It's been 7 years since I divorced, and I'm on a hiatus, as you know, right now. I haven't dated for a while and don't really have any plans to, but then people say, well, then what makes you qualified to help me with my marriage? And I just want to speak to that for a minute too,
because
neither one of us is married. But I think what it boils down to is I can teach you, you can learn from my mistakes. And I do know what a good, healthy relationship looks like. And it's something that, you know, I won't settle for anything but that. And the other thing is I've learned what healthy relationships are in my other relationships too. I've learned how to make, because that codependency wasn't, that wasn't unique to my marriage. I was a codependent. I consider myself a codependent in recovery. Mm-hmm. And I was a codependent in my other relationships too, my friendships and lots of other relationships. And I've learned how to figure out what my deal breakers were in all of those relationships. And I've ended some, of those friendships. I've ended some work relationships. And I've learned how to be a healthy human being. And I'm constantly saying to people, it takes two healthy human beings to make a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I 100% agree. I think that I've had numerous relationships. I had several during my separation, and I've had numerous since my divorce. And I will tell you that I've made it kind of my mission to look in the mirror when there are challenges, when there is conflict, and think about what I need to do differently. And if I'm willing to do that differently, because in the first relationship that I had after my divorce, the man I dated was a high functioning alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And he shared that with me first time we met. And I was like, okay. So he was putting that out there and telling me, you know, basically, if you can't accept that, you know, let me know now. And I had never dated an alcoholic, so I didn't know what to expect. Kind of like when somebody says, I'm autistic,
right?
And you've never dated an autistic person and you don't know what that means. You're like, okay, well, I really like you, whatever. So the alcohol did not scare me at all. What I realized later was that he had tremendous volatility. Almost sounds like, you know, what happened in your marriage. And the volatility turned into anger that turned into very verbally abusive conversations. Mm-hmm. And weren't even conversations. They were, you know, screaming at me. And one of those was in front of his daughter, and we were in a car. And I was like, no, here are the boundaries. You ever do that again, I am, you know, leaving, probably the relationship. It's unacceptable. So I realized that I could set boundaries in this relationship after my divorce, and that I could leave because I was no longer codependent. Mm-hmm. I had become healthier. I had gone for therapy. I think at the time I was still on the Cymbalta. So I was doing what I needed to do. And Jody, I know we're not saying here that we are in any way perfect human specimens. I am so far from, you know, where I think I'll be on my deathbed. There's so much more opportunity for growth. But I do have a growth mindset. I do want to learn. I do always choose to be a better partner with every relationship that I am in. And gosh, every partner that I have teaches me so much, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing I want to say, and this is what I'm learning now, I had some triggers from my marriage that were still kind of in my body and my system. And I realized that there wasn't anything that the person I was with was doing per se that was setting off the triggers, but it was unhealed wounds. Mm-hmm. And so I want to say to the listeners, getting clear on your own wounds and working with somebody that can help you heal them could be the game changer in your relationship. Doesn't mean you're going to stay, doesn't mean you're going to go, but it means you can make decisions from a place of emotional regulation or stability or balance rather than, you know, emotional dysregulation. And it can be so much healthier, so much healthier.
I 100% agree. And everything you just said, and that's part of the, what I run into with folks who come to me and they've recognized autism or neurodivergence in a partner. And yes, I mean, sometimes it's there, but you know, honestly, sometimes it's not, but let's just say, you know, for this, because we're here for neurodiverse relationships, that it is, but there are so many people who want that to be the issue, because if my partner has a problem, then either we can fix it, or sometimes it's a method of actually lowering boundaries or lowering the bar even more. Because if my partner's autistic, then I've got to figure out a way to accept this dysfunction. And I'm like, well, no, hold on. That's not the way we want to go about this either. But what we can do is look at, okay, what is going on here? And that involves you and it involves him. And in what way, you know, what are the things? The neurodivergence itself is not what's hurting you. It's the way that you interact, the expectations you have, the needs you have. And so when I had to look at this for myself a lot, when I felt hurt by something that, so the man that I dated for a couple of years, he was an undiagnosed autistic who was not willing to acknowledge the neurodivergence, but you know what? That was okay with me. I knew it. And that's, you know, I was able to recognize it. But I had to look at so many times, you know, when I felt hurt, why did I feel hurt? Was it because he actually did something hurtful? Mm-hmm. Or was it because there was some kind of wound in me, something in me that needed him to do or say something in a way that made me feel okay? And if he didn't do that, and then I felt hurt, is that really about him? Is he the one that was actually hurting me? And I actually, that's one of the things I ask people when I'm working with them is, do you believe that your partner wants you to feel pain? Do you think your partners did this because they don't care that that you feel any hurt, that they're just callous to it. Now, that is a pivotal question, because if the answer to that is no, I don't really think my partner wants me to hurt, then we have to stop and investigate and say, okay, then why are you feeling hurt? What's going on? And are they just really not recognizing your cues? Are you needing something that's more about you than them? Let's talk about it. But if the answer to that question is yes, I do think my partner enjoys seeing me hurt, likes to make sure, you know, to kind of put me in my place, that's a whole other conversation. And we're getting into a realm of toxicity, and whether or not that's a toxicity that has grown out of the dysfunction, like, you know, that snowball that we were both talking about, or are we looking at a toxic personality, someone who truly, and I've actually worked with couples where there is a partner who is both autistic and narcissistic or sociopathic, and it is truly a very, very bad situation. And as you, I think, you know, I have a whole course about that. And when a partner is both neurodivergent and has a toxic personality disorder, that relationship is not going to get better, and it can be very dangerous. So anyway, I kind of went on a tangent.
No, there. I think that's really important, because I do hear folks, you know, especially in the neurotypical support group, non-autistic support group that I run, you know, they thought their partner was narcissistic, and then they realized that, you know, that behavior was due to, you know, them trying to create a comfort zone in the home, or them getting experiencing sensory overload, or, you know, a shutdown or a meltdown or autistic burnout. And then when they understood they were in a neurodiverse relationship, they shifted their perspective. So I think that that is really important, because the question is, do you think that your partner is really trying to hurt you? They want you to be in pain. And that's a whole different story than what we're talking about. And I think that's something that folks have to ask themselves. And if you do think that, you know, there are Jody's course on narcissism, but there are other professionals out there that are more equipped to help Dr. you.
Rani, Kim Saeed, Rebecca Zung, there are quite a few that are very helpful to help people who are truly dealing with narcissism. And just another caveat there, we're all capable and have at some point, if not many times in our lives, said something to intentionally hurt somebody.
Yeah.
You know, when you talked about your screaming, you know, I certainly was pushed or reached that edge of desperation. It's like a desperate rage.
Yes.
And so everybody's capable of saying things and wanting to, you know, when we say something, you know, we're throwing daggers at people. There's a difference in that and someone who genuinely enjoys seeing you hurt, even when it's not a provoked moment where there's a conflict, someone who really just enjoys your pain, and it's almost like a game to them to keep you in pain. That is not neurodivergence. Right. And that is not normal.
Right. And that's not what we're talking about. Right. So Jody, I think we've gone through so many important topics and issues that are going to be really helpful to those that are listening. And I would love to kind of wrap up by talking about anything else that you want to address that I think will be helpful for folks to know that we will be open to discussing just about any topic in the support group. But really, we're hoping that this can fill a gap and a need that we've heard from folks that we've worked with, that sometimes you just don't know what, you know, the next step should be. And, you know, hearing what other people are going through, having Jody and I co-facilitate the discussion and to share our experiences, we hope will be helpful. So is there anything else that you want to share with the listeners before we wrap up?
I would say, just in summary, that I think this group would be really beneficial to anyone who is really struggling with the question of whether or not their relationship is something they want to stay in or not. And like you said, any topic really is, you know, something we can put on the table, whether it's intimacy, sexuality, abuse, all of that, because every, or even, but it doesn't even have to be some of those, you know, more really intensely difficult conversations. It can be more about, you know, compatibility. This group, members may get a lot of clarity about what neurodivergence is, and how it actually shows up in the relationship. But I think you and I both have put this group together. You know, you have a couple support group that helps people understand their relationship in the context of neurodiversity. I have my Facebook group, I have courses, I have private coaching, but this group is really specifically for people who are asking themselves that question of, is this relationship something I need to stay in? And really at any length of relationship, this doesn't, you know, isn't exclusive to people who are in marriages, but if they've been in a relationship for any period of time and they're really trying to figure out if this is the right thing for me, is this salvageable? I think that's the people that are going to benefit from this the most. Am I saying that?
Yes, that was perfect. You stated that perfectly. And if you have a question and you're not sure if this is a good fit for you, you know, come. It's $25 for each support group every month. You know, it's a minimal investment. And if you have any questions, I'll put my email in the show notes. You can email, and I'll put Jody's also. You can reach out to either one of us if you're wondering. It will be a maximum of 20 people because we want everybody to feel comfortable, you know, talking. It will not be videotaped. You know, we're asking that everybody respect everybody's confidentiality and all of that. So if you're interested, we'll put the information in the show notes about how you can sign up. And again, it's going to be the first Wednesday of every month, and it's going to be at 6:30 p.m. That's Eastern Standard Time. And if we have a lot of interest, you know, like you said, you work with a lot of people from Australia. I think that is 10 or 15% of my listeners are from Australia. So, you know, maybe we will do a second one. It just depends on the need and the demand. So, Jody, I know, you know, a lot of people probably know you who are listening, but if there are folks that want to get in touch with you, I also want you to share about the assessment that you do, because I think that that is very, very important and critically helpful for folks that don't want to go through the formal diagnosis process.
Sure. Yeah. So, you can see all about me and all my services at my website, which is jodicarlton.com. That's JodiCarlton.com. And I'm sure you can put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
I do an assessment for couples, and occasionally I'll have a neurodivergent individual who just wants me to assess them, but I don't do a medical or a diagnosis that can be used for medical or legal or like work accommodations. And mainly that's because of licensure regulations. I was licensed here in Georgia for 20 years and I'm trained and qualified to diagnose. I'm not I don't have a PhD, I have a master's. So I didn't ever do full psychologicals on my own. I did actually work alongside a neuropsychologist doing assessments. But what I provide for people now is a personal assessment. It's for their personal use and clarity. And the way I do this with couples is just so, so useful, because we talk so much today about our differences and how we work differently. So I assess both partners. Usually people think about one person getting assessment, getting diagnosed, but that's not really useful in terms of how it affects the relationship.
Right.
And so I assess them both with the exact same assessments. And we look at neurodiversity, we look at executive functioning, we look at sensory processing, we look at personality traits and characteristics and empathy and systematic thinking. And then we look at the numbers side by side. We look at the data, and I have charts and this big, huge, like 25-page report you get, and we go over it. And it's so eye-opening. And I've had so many people say, you know, we've been talking about how we're neurodiverse and we're different, but oh my gosh, when we look at it on paper, wow.
Right.
And it really helps to emphasize that different is just what, it's just that, it's different. We all seem to understand personality types, people, you know, Myers-Briggs personality typing, Enneagrams, and nobody really seems to think that one personality is better than the other, or it's the right personality.
Right. And
it's the same with neurotypes.
Right.
One neurotype tends to be less common in the world, although we're seeing it a whole lot more and more and more. But neither one is right or wrong. But the goal is to understand the differences. So that's the evaluation I do. I also do some private coaching, but honestly, Mike, you know, I have limited coaching hours because I'm doing so much other podcasting and writing and Facebook, I mean, so much stuff. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this group with you, because I have a lot of free stuff and my courses are always pay what you can afford. You can, and people do, people get it for free. People pay me $100. And, you know, honestly, I just want you to have access to it. But then my private coaching is the rate is a good bit higher, because that is just literally one-on-one time with me. You get, you know, I'm right there with you. And so I'm really happy to be able to provide this low cost support group and co-facilitate with you. You and I are super aligned, and I think that we're really going to be able to help so many people with this.
Yeah, I agree. And Jody very graciously sent me that 25-page report, you know, blocked out everybody's name. And I was so impressed with the depth of information that, gosh, I wish that had been available, Jody, when I was married, because what it does, it allows you to see and understand why you've had the misunderstandings and the conflict and even the judgment and the contempt in so many areas of your relationship, and helps both partners understand where you can grow or change or modify or begin to better understand yourself and each other, mm-hmm. and where you complement each other. Because I can tell you, some of the neurodiverse couples that I have met are powerhouses.
Yeah.
Are amazing, mm-hmm. right? Because they complement each other so much and respect each other's differences so much. And I think that assessment tool that you have created or that you've brought together, I know you've brought together a lot of different things, can be really a game changer for folks that want
to. I totally agree. And just to add to what you said about the powerhouse couple, absolutely true. I use the analogy of a sports team a lot, where you don't, you know, it's football season here and I'm a big Georgia football fan. But we don't have, you know, 15 quarterbacks right out there. You know, we've got to have a quarterback, and I'm not, I don't know positions that well, but I, you know, the receivers and the linemen, they all have their own specialty on the team. And without everybody being good at what they do, the team is no good. And so as a couple, to have the idea that, you know, I want you to be more like me, be more like me, be more like me, that's actually a weakness in a lot of ways. Now, there's some things we do need alignment in, but there, you know, when one person has a strength that is the other one's weakness, that can really be a positive thing too.
Amen. Absolutely. And I think that's a great positive way to end this conversation. And as always, Jody, this has been fantastic. And I hope it's been helpful for the listeners to kind of get a feel for a little bit of what you might experience in the support group and to get to know a little bit more about Jody and myself and some of our lived experiences and both the challenges and the positive experiences we've had. And Jody, I am so looking forward to doing the support group with you and to many more conversations with those listeners who join us. So thank you so much.